Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. This will be the last talk that I give before the rains retreat, which starts next week. And our entry to the rain ceremony at Dharmasara will be this Sunday. And during the 3 months of the rains retreat, the monks and nuns stay in the monastery and do more formal practice and study. And there will be a series of guest speakers coming to give the talks on Friday night here. So you won't miss out on your dose of Dharma for the week. But if you want to see the nuns, then you need to come to the monastery. And everyone's invited to come on Sunday for our entry to the rains ceremony, which starts at 10 o'clock. So many of us come to Dharma practice and to meditation hoping that it's going to help us to sort out our life and to fix up some of the problems that we have in our life or problems with our relationships. And we may discover as we go along that some of those relationships improve with the practice that we do, but there are still some things which recur and which don't seem to get sorted out no matter how much effort we put into them. And sometimes we can be very disappointed because situations that we thought we'd resolved, when we encounter them again, we find we haven't done as well as we thought we were going to. And often people will say to me, I don't know, I've been practicing so long and I thought I'd let go of this and I'm back in the same situation and I find all this old stuff is just coming up again. And they feel very disappointed because they haven't been able to solve their problem. And so tonight I'd like to talk about trying to give a bigger perspective to the work that we're doing on the spiritual path so that we understand a little bit why we still meet these same situations, or when we meet them, we still haven't solved them. Because very often I think we don't realize the scope of the work that we're doing. And we think that we can figure it out by knowing the circumstances of just this life. And that once we've got the tools of the path, that we'll be able to sort things out because we're trying hard and we're putting into practice what we've been told. And after all, we're pretty smart. And yet things don't get sorted out. And even if we're doing all the right things, I think sometimes we haven't got all the information that we think we have. And this is because in terms of how we understand this life, this is one life in a series of many, many lifetimes that we've lived and that we're going to live. And this is a teaching which the Buddha gave from his own enlightenment. On the night of his enlightenment, the Buddha experienced three true knowledges. And the first of these true knowledges was the recollection of his countless previous births, previous lifetimes. And he saw how many times he had been born, lived, died, and been reborn again countless, countless times. And he saw in what sort of circumstances he'd lived, what sort of experiences he'd had, what sort of relationships, what sort of successes and failures, happinesses, sufferings, and that the whole process had gone on again and again and again, not just life as a human being, but life in the heavenly realms, life as a king, life as someone with power, all different situations, and he saw that there were countless lifetimes. And having seen that, having realized for himself this endless cycle of birth and death, there arose in him a great dissatisfaction with being reborn again, because he saw that no matter what the circumstances were, no matter how good they were, that they all ended in death. And that nothing that he experienced had brought ultimate fulfillment. And none of the happinesses that he'd experienced lasted. And that was the first true knowledge that arose in him on the night of his enlightenment. And the second true knowledge was that he saw the arising and passing away of other beings, not just himself, but how beings, human beings, animals, heavenly beings, arise and pass away, or we would say are born and die, according to their karma, according to the quality, the moral quality, the ethical quality of their life. That at the time of their death, the quality of their mind was the thing which determined where they would be reborn, and that there was this ongoing cycle of birth and death, arising and passing away, that was happening not just for him, but for all beings. And again, this dissatisfaction with being reborn arose in him. And the third true knowledge that arose in the Buddha on the night of his enlightenment was the overcoming of the asavas, the outflows or the effluence. This is asava is a Pali word which is translated in various ways, but it basically means the way in which the mind and we go out into the world seeking happiness, pleasure, fulfillment, satisfaction in all various aspects of life. Whatever state we're born into, if we're born into it, into an animal, the animal realm, to seek enough to eat, a mate to procreate with, to continue the family, and shelter where we can be safe. And as a human being, all the things that we do to survive, all the things, all the ways and means that we take to sustain this life, from finding enough food and shelter and medicine, clothing for the body, to, at the most basic level, just surviving, to the most extravagant level, driving around in Rolls Royces and having gold-plated taps in our bathroom. All of the ways in which we try to sustain this life. Not only sustain it, but if we have the option, to make it as comfortable as possible. To manipulate conditions to be the way that we would like them to be. And of course that extends not just to the material aspects of our life, but to the relationships that we have. Our intimate relationships with the people that are close to us, the relationships we have with our career and our livelihood, the relationships we have with the wider society, not just the material aspects, but those non-material aspects which feed our heart, our sense of ourself as being successful or good or happy or whatever. The asavas, the ways we go out into the world to accomplish that end. And when the Buddha saw how many times he had been able to fulfill all his desires, and yet those desires still didn't bring ultimate satisfaction. They still didn't stop death when it was time for him to die. It still didn't allow him to take with him from one life to the next the people that he'd formed close attachments to. That through countless lives, no matter how successful they were still ultimately fleeting. When he saw that again and again, this desire to be reborn anywhere, no matter how materially well off or how successful at manipulating the environment, that wish, that impulse, that desire just fell away. And so we say that with the falling away of that wish, there was the overcoming of the asavas. Not just the falling away of the wish because he couldn't have things the way he wanted, but the complete and utter abandonment of being born anywhere. And these were the three true knowledges which arose in the Buddha on the night of his enlightenment. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this tonight is because I think it's really important for us to understand the scope of the Buddha's teaching and what were his reference points when he was passing on the wisdom which he developed through his own practice. But when he was talking about unsatisfactoriness, he was not just talking about this lifetime. From his direct knowledge, he was talking about the unsatisfactoriness over countless lifetimes in every situation. But the other important thing is to know that when we're talking about this life and what this life is like for us, and the things that we're dealing with in this life as we try to manipulate it, to make it as pleasant as possible, as comfortable as possible, as successful as possible, that we are dealing with factors, influences that come not only from this life, but from previous births as well. And that's why when we're practicing, we can practice and think that we know all the reasons why such and such is happening, or all the factors involved in this situation. and we expect that we're going to be able to sort it out, get it right, get rid of the things that we don't want to have to deal with any longer. And yet there seems to be always a missing piece to the puzzle. And I'd just like to suggest for you to reflect on that that missing piece or those unknown factors may be things that are coming from a previous life. And I mentioned the Buddha's enlightenment and these three true knowledges so that you will understand that the Buddha talked about previous lives and talked about rebirth as a reality. But he also said that as practitioners, we don't have to believe what he says just because it's said by the teacher. We have to explore and find out for ourselves. So even just hearing the teaching that there is or there are previous lives and that there is rebirth, it doesn't mean that you have to believe it. But when you're trying to work out why it is that things practice doesn't help you to get rid of the things that you don't like in your personality or get rid of the relationships that you don't like in this life, I suggest that you might take into account, well, maybe it's true, there are influences that I've brought with me that I'm still not fully aware of, and that's why I still haven't been able to sort out the situation that I'm in. When we are trying to sort out our situations, we very often turn to thinking and formulating ideas and having views and opinions about our situation, ourselves, and other people, which I'm suggesting we are formulating on limited information. And so what I'm trying to encourage is that at least you have a sense that I may not have all the facts that I need. I may not have all the information that I need to make a final judgment about my situation or this person or whatever it is that we're confronted with that we find perplexing or even downright painful. There may be things about this that we think we can sort out by thinking and which are outside the grasp of thinking, because when we think, we always think within the limitations of what we know. Thinking is a conditioned phenomenon, and it's just one part of the mind as described by the Buddha. Thinking is not the whole of the mind, and when we talk about the mind, we don't just mean thinking. But until we start to practice meditation and discover what's there beyond thinking, we believe our thoughts and take them to be the truth, and we take them to be the whole picture. And we make our assumptions and build up our views and opinions based on our thinking. And very often our thinking just takes us into dead ends. It just takes us into what we already know. It doesn't allow us to stretch outside those boundaries. And even when we practice, as we did tonight, the simple meditation of coming back to the breath and making the breath the focus of our awareness, of our attention, you could experience for yourself how powerful thoughts are, how important we make them, how seductive they are. When they come into the mind, they take us away. Even when the instruction is, don't allow the thoughts to be important, the most important thing is the breath. thoughts are so seductive. It's so much a habit of the mind to indulge in thinking that when the thought comes, as it will, we just follow it. Follow it, get carried away with it, believe it. And it's very hard to get to the point where we don't do that. It takes training and discipline, patient practice, to build up the strength of the mind to stay with the meditation object and to uncover and strengthen that quality of the mind which is able to stand back from our experience and even stand back from thinking and observe thinking as a phenomenon that's arising in the mind but which is not the whole of the mind. Once we're able to do that, then we can become a little skeptical about our thoughts. Maybe they're not the whole story. Maybe they're not all the truth. Maybe there is something extra that I haven't thought about yet. I haven't been exposed to yet. To get to this point where we no longer are believing our thoughts automatically opens us up to a wider range of experience. Because what happens usually is that the thoughts are so persuasive that they crowd out anything else, any intuition or any I don't know the answer, any openness to something other than what we already are conditioned to think and to believe. And it's only when we can see past the thoughts to a wider horizon that we may be able to acknowledge, I don't know. And to be able to be with the I don't know uncertainty. Perhaps there's something I haven't seen in this situation. To open ourselves up to another way of looking at and dealing with and responding to what seems a very familiar situation that we've always approached in a particular way. Because of our conditioning, because of how it seems always to have been that way. We might even say because of our experience, we've always approached it that way. But have we got the whole story? If we had other facts, if we saw a bigger picture, perhaps even the way that we relate to that situation will change. Now, to give you a concrete example of this, I'd like to relate a story that someone told me recently. Someone who came to me and said, I've just been in this situation and I thought I'd gotten past it. I thought I'd let go of my reactions in this situation, and when I got back into a similar situation, they all came up again, and I'm really disappointed with my spiritual practice. That was one meeting, and then as we talked about things, talked a little bit about things and explored a little, they came and told me, you know, something very interesting is happening. I'm having a sense of a physical illness that I'm having, which I can't quite put my finger on. I don't know why I'm having it. There's nothing to explain it. But the situation they were having was very painful neck And the situation that they had described to me that they had been in recently, which they thought they had sorted out and that they'd worked through, was a very painful relationship with their mother. And they said that when I went to see my mother this time, I thought it was going to be so much better because I've done all this spiritual work. And when I got back into the situation with my mother, all this old stuff came up again. And I don't know where it's coming from and I don't know how to deal with it. And then after they had been in that situation, they had this very painful feeling in their neck. And they worked and worked and worked with it. And then they started through their meditation practice to get this sense of themselves actually choking, not just having a sore neck, but choking. And they felt that this was something more than just a physical illness or as a result of an accident. And so they started to think, maybe it's got something to do with my mother. And so they asked their mother, was there anything when I was born? Was I a breech baby or was it something strange when I was born? And their mother said, no, you were fine, just ordinary birth. But as this person started to practice and started to stay in touch with the feeling that they were having, rather than trying to think it all out, they became more and more aware of this sense of being strangled and also being struggling, trying to, it felt like, be born. And they continued to work with this until they went and asked their mother again, was I born with the cord around my neck? Was that what happened when I was born? And the mother said, no, you weren't. It was just a normal birth. I've told you that. But my little sister was born with the cord around her neck and she died. And that was the first time this person had heard that her mother had had a little sister who was born with the cord around her neck and she died. And the story unfolded that the mother had been the eldest of a big family. And the baby who died had been born when she was already about 13 years old. And she'd been so looking forward to this little sister who was coming after having 5 brothers. And she was so looking forward to the birth of that child. And when the child died, when the child was born, it died. And it created so much sadness in her because of that. This is the mother. And then when she had her own child, the person who was telling me the story, there was always some sort of conflicted relationship between them from as long as that person could remember. And when she was talking to her mother about this, especially after she started to hear her mother's telling of this sister who died and how sad she was, her mother just spontaneously said, you know, you've always brought me sadness too, from the time that you were born. The mother's relationship to this little baby, this person who was telling me the story, was, you've always brought me sadness too. And the person who was telling me the story said, the penny just dropped. This feeling that she was having, that she was being strangled, the feeling that she was struggling to be born. Putting two and two together, she thought, perhaps I was that little sister who was born and who died. And I've been born again as my mother's child. And for whatever reason, we're in this relationship, and the relationship we have is that I've never been able to please my mother, no matter what I've done. And from the time I was born, my mother has always felt sad at having me around. Now, you might say, well, that's a good story, and it could have all sorts of explanations. But when we're looking at understanding the situation we find ourselves in this life, and we're trying to understand, for example, that person, trying to understand, why is it that I can never please my mother? Why is it, for as long as I can remember, we've always had a poor relationship? Even as a little child, and I tried to do what I could to please her and make her happy, never seemed to work. And no matter how long I've practiced this spiritual path, and I seem to get a handle on feeling good about myself and repairing my relationship and whatever, when I come back together with my mother, it just comes out of from nowhere, this old conflicted relationship, this fractured relationship. And somehow blaming herself and somehow blaming her mother. And yet, once there was this understanding of, wow, this is a really much bigger picture than I imagined, as I was trying to sort out our relationship. Wow, my mother's not to blame. She's just got this great sadness in her heart. And somehow, energetically, I'm connected with that. Somehow, energetically, we're connected on this wavelength. It's not her fault. It's not mine. So maybe it's not possible for me to ever please my mother. Maybe that's not what is going to resolve our relationship. Maybe what I need to do is be more accepting of the relationship we have and work with that. And so it opened up a whole new ball game, a much wider vision for this person of what their practice was about in relationship with their mother, in relationship with themselves. Instead of feeling that, well, I can never win, I must be hopeless, understanding by redefining the situation, not taking it so personally of, I've got to sort it out. How can I sort it out? If it is this over lifetimes, this relationship, what can I do to come to terms with it, to understand it here and now? And so we come to what can we do in this practice. And when we talk about the mind in Buddhism, as I've already said, the mind is much more than just the thinking part, because thinking is always the result of conditioning. We think about things in a way that we've been shown or taught or exposed to. It's very hard to think outside the square. So once we get to understand that and know that about thinking, and we become more skeptical about thoughts, then that almost is like opening the window and letting in maybe some new thoughts, new ways of looking at things, new ideas. We don't just dismiss everything that we're not familiar with or that isn't what we've already believed. We don't dismiss it out of hand. We're prepared at least to look at it. But the other part of the mind which we also need to address, if we're going to get this wider vision of our experience, is the feeling part. And the feeling part is, at one level, what we call our emotions, but at a more basic level, it is simply the physical feelings that manifest in this body in connection with emotions and thoughts. So if we are thinking happy thoughts, if we're feeling happy, then the physical feelings that manifest in the body are pleasant feelings. If we're thinking angry thoughts, if we're feeling angry, then the physical feelings that manifest in this body are unpleasant. A whole range of feelings from slightly to seriously unpleasant, with wholesome emotions, with happy thoughts, from mildly pleasant to very pleasant. Now, when we're trying to get a picture beyond words, beyond thoughts, we need to go back to the feeling level and not just the emotion of I'm sad or I'm hurt, but how it feels directly. Putting our attention or taking our attention away from the story, away from the conversation, the chatter about it, to the direct experience of it. So, I'm sad is a label that we put onto a physical and a mental feeling. When we go to the level of the physical feelings in the body, we try to go directly, specifically, to the feelings that we associate with sadness. We move right away from the story of why I'm sad, or who made me sad, or how sad I am this time, to the direct experience of what it feels like in the body, this sadness. And we stay with the feeling and observe it, however it feels, wherever it is, watching it as it changes and fades away, without feeding that feeling by thinking about it. And as we stop feeding the feeling by thinking about it, by talking about it to ourselves, we observe that that feeling of sadness actually does pass away. And if we stop feeding it, if we don't feed it so often, it gradually gets smaller, lighter, until it no longer arises quite so easily, quite so readily in that situation, doesn't stay as long, doesn't feel as strong. This is actually the way that we purify the mind. We feed our emotions, we feed our reactions, we feed these feelings by thinking about them, by thinking about them in the same old way again and again, in our old habit patterns. And if we can break those habit patterns by stopping the thoughts, then we can gradually starve the feelings that go along with the thoughts. We can give ourselves then a chance to see a situation in a fresh way without just reacting according to our old conditioning. The thoughts, the thinking, the old patterns feed our sense of self. They feed who we think we are. Who we think we are is very much connected to our history, to our story, the story we tell ourselves about us, about me, what I've experienced in this life, what's been done to me, what I've accomplished, what I've done. We feed our sense of self through thinking. And as we tell ourselves those stories, as we repeat those histories, then we reproduce the feelings that go with them. And that strengthens the sense of ourselves being that person, having that experience, being fixed in that particular way. That sadness, for example. If we're going to break through the conditioned reactions, we have to stop feeding them in as they arise in the body. We have to stop feeding them with the thinking, with the thoughts. Otherwise, we are going to continue to perceive ourselves as a fixed entity, a fixed being, me, who has all of this accumulated experience and history, which we solidify, which we make solid, which we say is always going to be like this. It has been like that in the past. It arises now in the present, so that proves that it's true, that it's who I am. And we limit ourselves and say, that's all I am. What I am now is what I'm going to be in the next moment and the next moment and the next moment. And we reinforce all that through our thinking about it, the way that we think about it. Reproduces the same reactions, and those reactions reinforce the thinking. And so it goes on. And this spiritual path is about moving beyond that sense of ourselves as something that's solid and fixed, starting to see the spaces, just like we find the spaces between the in-breath and the out-breath, but only when we're able to pay attention, only when we're able to stay in a relaxed, alert way, paying attention, do we see those spaces. Only when we start to look at our experience in the same detached way, do we start to see the spaces and the places where we can start to let go of the things that cause us pain and suffering, instead of carrying them around with us and thinking that we're stuck with them forever and ever. Instead of thinking that that's all there can be to our life, we see that the possibilities are vast of what our life can be. So for the person that I was mentioning, their experience with their mother, instead of blaming themselves or blaming their mother or feeling a victim and feeling that their mother is the one that caused them to be like this, they could see by taking this bigger perspective that there was no victim and there was no one who was the cause, but both mother and herself were caught in a much bigger process. Both of them. No one to blame. But what can I do with it now? How can I work with this situation both for my own good and for my mother's well-being as well. And even if all I can do is not to blame my mother in the same way, then that will be beneficial for her, and it will certainly be beneficial for me. That was the sort of understanding that developed in this person. And of course, it's not the end of the story. One has to go on living and dealing with things that aren't completely resolved, that aren't completely sorted out. But if you see that you can do this with something that is so significant a part of one's life, so significant a part of who we think we are, where we think we stand in relation to another very important person in our life, then it gives tremendous confidence and insight also to see what can be done with other parts of our life, other things that we think are fixed and solid and are unchangeable. So the purpose of this talk was to encourage all of you to look at the spiritual practices that you're doing and to not think that they're not good enough, that even when we keep practicing, somehow it's not working out the way we planned or hoped, or something must be wrong. It's not that we're not doing the practice correctly or that we don't have the tools to do the work, but very often we haven't seen deeply enough yet. We haven't seen a big enough picture to have an understanding of all the factors that are involved in our situation. So the encouragement is just to keep on working, keep on practicing, because little by little, as we even take the step towards not believing our thoughts so readily, not getting carried away with our thinking so easily, if we can at least put a little bit of space between the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves and others, if we can at least detach a little bit from that and open up our mind to other possibilities, that will in itself be a step in the right direction. And then as we continue to practice, particularly as we continue to strengthen the aspect of the mind which is just knowing before the thinking starts, that will help us little by little to see the spaces in our mind, the spaces in our stories, to start to uncover that bigger picture of who we are and where we fit in to this thing that we call life. As I said before, we don't have to believe things just because the teacher said them, but I encourage you to investigate these things in your own experience and practice. And my wish is that this teaching may be of benefit to all of us. May the merit of this teaching help us all to attain Nibbana.
Bhagavata Sāvaka Saṅkha.